Good morning, and welcome to Sports Interview with Allegory on this Saturday morning. How are we doing this morning? So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning right here on WLAW 88.3 FM Southampton, serving Eastern Long Island and Southern Connecticut, 96.9 in Western Suffolk, and streaming at WLAW.org/radio and on your favorite streaming platforms. And each show is archived on my website at annlegory.com and distributed on my podcast via Audioboom and iTunes. Well, from celebrities who love golf to experts and movers and shakers in the game, Sports Interview with Ann Legory delves into the people, topics, and issues that I find really compelling. And in this show, I talk with the versatile actor Alex Hyde-White, actually one of the last contract players in Hollywood when he signed with Universal Pictures back in 1978. Well, you remember Alex Hyde-White as the polo-playing grandson of Ralph Bellamy in the iconic film Pretty Woman. He's done so much variety in Hollywood. He worked with Steven Spielberg twice in Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade. He also starred in Catch Me If You Can as the divorce lawyer. In the early 90s, Alex played the superhero Reed Richards, aka Mr. Fantastic, in The Fantastic Four. Well, I met Alex playing in several celebrity golf tournaments through the years. We became very good friends. And, you know, he's played golf since he was a kid. And just like his acting, he is just an excellent golfer. In the second part of the show, we'll learn about concert golf through Jordan Peace, the Senior Vice President, Corporate Development Officer at Concert Golf Partners. It's a company that invests in private country clubs nationwide. They have over 30 golf clubs in their portfolio, growing very quickly. And they pride themselves on capital improvements, service, member programs, and social activities. So Jordan Peace will tell us all about Concert Golf Partners. Let me tell you about my new book, Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. I'm just so proud of this book. Jim Nantz, the great Jim Nantz, CBS sports broadcaster, did the foreword for the book. And basically, I picked 12 golf legends, 6 men, 6 women. And I spent a lot of time interviewing each personality. And it's basically what they've learned from their championship golf careers that they use in their day-to-day life. Everybody from Gary Player to Padre Carrington, Tom Watson, Jack Nicklaus, Ben Crenshaw, Bernard Longer, Nancy Lopez, Annika Sorenstam, Renee Powell, Dottie Pepper, Amy Alcott, Jan Stevenson, Annika Sorenstam. These iconic personalities share all kinds of life wisdom. And it's really not a golf book. It's, well, they tell their incredible personal stories, many I had never heard before. And I've been covering golf for, gosh, 3 decades. But they go into so many interesting personal stories and really share wisdom that all of us can use in our day-to-day lives. It's very uplifting and inspirational. For instance, Padre Carrington, his chapter is titled Embrace Fear and Nerves and Learn from Your Mistakes. Jack Nicklaus talks about putting family first and the fact that integrity and sportsmanship is paramount. And I love Gary Player's chapter. Gary talks about having a lifelong passion for what you do. Have love in your heart. Gary is a walking encyclopedia of wisdom, and he is so interested in sharing that wisdom. He's 88 years young. He's a fitness guru. He loves doing his push-ups and his sit-ups every day, and he plays golf as often as he can still to this day, and he helps personalities with their golf games and with life. And I just love the fact that he talks about it's not, you're never too old to pursue your passion. Always have a passion in your life and pursue it. And that's what keeps you happy and that's what keeps you going. Just Gary Player is just incredible. Amy Alcott, I love her chapter. I talked about this in Drew Budd's column in the Southampton Press. He recently did just a beautiful article on me and the fact that my book, Life on the Green, Lessons in Wisdom from Legends of Golf, won Best Golf Book globally by the International Network of Golf in their 2025 Media Awards. And I shared that Amy Alcott's chapter is titled, Be the Captain of Your Own Ship and Trust Yourself. Amy was not from a country club family. She kind of did things her own way, much to the dismay of her parents and various advisors who wanted her to do it the traditional route, go to college and then become, you know, maybe turn pro after that. She skipped out on college and became a golf pro. And when she was young, she would kind of climb over the fence at Riviera to play with the boys. And it's a very exclusive private course. And they didn't have the money to join a country club. So she would somehow get on Riviera, play with the guys and practice her game. And oftentimes she'd be on the putting green practicing next to the great actress Rita Hayworth and didn't even know it was Rita Hayworth until her mother pointed it out one day when her mother came to pick her up. Amy talks about her incredible career and being the captain of your own ship, doing it your way. I hope you will enjoy Life on the Green, Lessons in Wisdom from Legends of Golf. You can order it on Amazon or through Barnes & Noble.
Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori. And Concert Golf Partners is a boutique club hospitality company that invests its own capital to fund projects and build new amenities. And Concert Golf Partners currently owns 36 private golf facilities and counting. And here to talk about Concert Golf Partners' rapid growth in the last several years is Jordan Peace, Senior VP Corporate Development for Concert Golf Partners. Hey, Jordan, welcome to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori.
Yeah, hey, Anne, thanks for having me. I'm excited about the conversation.
Glad to have you on Sports Interview. And my goodness, Concert Golf Partners, CGP, is rocking and rolling, moving and shaking. Your company has acquired 6 clubs since last December 2023. So I'm wondering, to what do you attribute such rapid growth in such a short period of time, Jordan?
Well, our history has been growing through strategic acquisitions and recapitalization. I would say, yeah, maybe we've sped up a bit in the last year or two. 2022, I think we also bought 6 clubs. And I guess the growth has, or the acceleration that you describe, really has been, it hasn't been super strategic. And what I mean is, it's not like we're out there saying, we got to buy as many clubs as we possibly can. That is never, ever, ever a conversation we have. The conversations we have are all about buying clubs that we believe fit into our portfolio appropriately and that we know we can be the right stewards of. And what that is that's private clubs, you know, premier private clubs, kind of upscale, not entry-level clubs, where people live and work, right? Because we want to get people using the club there all the time, build a community. And that's where you really have the opportunity to reinvest in the club. Your members appreciate the reinvestment and you can operate a club for 50 years, right? Or it's 100 years. And that's how we think about it. So I guess I would say the opportunity in the last couple of years has been, there have been the right clubs for our portfolio out there. And we're still very disciplined in finding the right clubs for us.
Well, I love that mission. And I understand that Jose Feliciano, not the singer, but the chairman of Clear Lake Capital, is a big investor. And he's become the chairman of the Concert Golf Partners board.
Yeah. Yeah. Jose is a great guy who loves golf. So he's a great partner for us. Yeah. Clear Lake's unique. They're a large investment firm and they are, you know, one of our investors, and Jose is an important piece of that. And we're lucky to have them as partners. Jose, like I said, he took up golf a few years ago and he's become just a golf nut. You know, he's always thinking about where he's going to be playing. And it's really beneficial for us to have, you know, a chairman who understands what it's like to be a member at a club, understand what it's like to need to reinvest in a very expensive piece of land to keep your members happy. And so Jose's, yeah, he's a lot of fun. He's a really, really, really thoughtful guy, and he's a great partner for us for sure.
And how did CGP connect with Mr. Feliciano?
Yeah, so he and our CEO have known each other for years. And so Jose and Peter have known each other. When the opportunity came to invest, Clear Lake was excited to do it. You know, they own, they like sports. They own Chelsea Football Club, so they're soccer nuts as well, and golf. And then they've taken runs to try and invest in football as well, because they like sports. But I don't know that they haven't quite done that yet. We'll see one day if they do. But Peter and Jose knew each other, and like I said, that understood and liked what Concert Golf has been doing since 2011, which started in Lake Mary, Florida. So I think you know that history well, Anne. And so that, you know, connected through, I guess, personal relationship, and then the opportunity to invest came along. And like I mentioned, it's been a great partner for us, just simply because they understand our business and let us do what's best for the clubs. And what's
And you
best for the
mentioned
clubs is what's best for the members.
Peter Nanula, the
Yeah.
CEO. Give us his background.
Yeah, Peter actually got his law degree from Harvard and then practiced law for an incredibly brief period of time and realized that he didn't want to be a practicing lawyer. And then Peter also loves golf, grew up playing golf, and has a passion for it. And I think played high school golf in Tampa, as a matter of fact. Played at Carrollwood, which is a club that
Oh,
is in our portfolio
sure.
today. And Peter started Arnold Palmer Golf with Arnold in the 90s and ran, you know, I think 60 clubs, half of them being private, and then got out of the business and really was an investor for a bunch of years in different capacities. And then in 2011 saw the opportunity to get back into golf, because there were a lot of really, really great clubs in 2011 that were going to have trouble keeping their doors open just because of the macro economy. But these are great assets that just needed some care, and they would survive. They needed some investment. And so he saw an opportunity to really invest in a few clubs, and that was kind of the start of Concert Golf. So Peter's background is really golf. It's really the hospitality business around golf, and mostly in private, you know, the private country club world, which is what we focus on today.
Ironically, I went to school at University of South Florida in Tampa, and one of the first golf balls I ever hit was with a sorority sister who lived on Carrollwood.
Carolyn, wow.
We went right in her backyard, and I was just so excited that we could just go out and just, play the
Yeah.
golf course. So,
Yeah,
yeah.
it's a really good golf course. It's a fun golf course that still is in good shape today, 27 holes. It's a fun place. So
And as
that's
you
cool.
know,
History.
we winter in Eloqua Lakes in Lake Mary, and
Yeah.
my home club down there is the Legacy Club of Eloqua Lakes and Heathrow,
Yeah.
new
Yeah.
concert properties.
Yeah. I love, I haven't actually ever played Legacy. But I love Tom Fazio. I've heard it's hard, and I'm not a great
Very
golfer.
tough.
I've driven around it, but I like the history there too. Before they filmed the Buick commercial, do you know
That's
that
right.
history?
Tiger
Yeah,
Woods,
Tiger Woods.
a
Yeah, where
par three.
he surprises people and plays closest to the pin, and all the members were like, "What in the world?" So it's got some cool history, and it's a great golf course, and everybody loves a Fazio design. At least I do. And so it's a great golf course. Both are great golf courses.
They really are. And they're so different. It's they
Yeah.
complement it, they're so different. It gives the members two totally different experiences, and they're literally 5 minutes away from each other. So I could not be happier down there. But
Great.
well, let's talk. I've been reading a lot about Concert Golf Partners, and what I loved reading about, the company is that the company pays off all club debt and ensures that member assessments are a thing of the past. Can you talk about that for a little bit?
Yeah, there's a lot of clubs that are member owned where you know, they end up stifling themselves with debt, and then, you know, clubs need continuous reinvestment, right? You need new greens every, you know, so many years. You need new bunkers, you got turf conditions. So you have to continue to invest. Well, oftentimes clubs you know, their only path forward is to assess their members, right? They need to raise capital. They have big projects they want to do, and they need to assess members. Well, if everybody at the club's fine with an assessment and they all just write the checks, or their assistants write the checks and nobody would ever know it, those clubs are fine. They just continue to buy what they need to buy as a part of their membership. But as you know, and I know, there's a lot of clubs where they don't want to be assessed. You don't necessarily trust the board or think the money is being spent the right way. And there's, if there's 300 members, there's 300 opinions. And so a lot of times people have felt our model works really well, where we can walk into a club, we can offer to pay off the debt of the club, we can offer to invest in the needed capital projects that the board sees, but then we're the operators of the club moving forward. And so we become, I guess I'll call it a benevolent dictator, but the key word there is benevolent over dictator, in that, the incentives are aligned very, very much in that. For the club to be healthy, people have to be happy, and the club has to be invested in. And so, for it to work, you pay off all the debt. It gives a clean balance sheet. It makes sure that that you have the money to invest moving forward, because you kind of wash the balance sheet away. You invest it. You accelerate those capital projects, and then typically that puts the, I'll call it the that gives the club what it needs. Kind of accelerates things to where it becomes healthy, right? And so the recapitalization process has worked 20 over 20 times for us, and we have thriving clubs where that's exactly what we've done. And again, we don't, now we have some scale at our, clubs, where because we have so many that we're able to generate more cash flow just from savings on insurance and food and beverage and alcohol and cart leases, things that we can buy cheaper that a single club can't. And when we do that, we have the ability to just reinvest more, and the model works better than what would just be for a single member-owned club. And like I said, that's what we've done 20 times before, and it's worked really well. And you're down at two of our clubs, 36 holes, and we've reinvested constantly. We think there's new greens there at Heathrow. We just built the top tracer on the range, redid the bar down, or the restaurant downstairs. So like, we're constantly investing, and we're not assessing members for it. So the model works really well.
Yeah, no, that's great because that's not a common thing in the private golf industry, as you know, not assessing members for a lot of these newer, costs. Also, you redid the clubhouse at Legacy of Alico Lakes, and it's beautiful. Well, good work there. And I also love the fact, and we'll talk about some of the new acquisitions in a second. But what I love about Concert is that members can enjoy reciprocal privileges. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So at we have 36 clubs, and we offer to our members what we call a travel benefit, right? So if you live in Orlando and you're a member at Heathrow and Legacy, and you're on a business trip in Denver, we've got two stunning clubs there, Hywan, which is an evergreen, and the Ranch, which is just north of town. And if you want to entertain, you're just going to use that club like it's yours. And that travel benefit, people who travel often and want to play a couple rounds a year at different clubs, yeah, it's a great benefit to be offered. I love it just because you get to experience. It's easy because you have your member number, your pro is going to set up your tee time, right? It's going to be very easy as long as you know your home pro well and can call the pro shop. And you have that benefit just to be able to play golf at other places. And yeah, we have a lot of members that take a lot of advantage of that. And we've got clubs that, like, we have another Tom Fazio design in Des Moines, Iowa, which is, I love all of our clubs, but that may be one of my favorite golf courses. It's just such a good golf course. Well, that's a great benefit. You're in Des Moines, or you're in Iowa on a family trip or business trip, go play, and you get to experience, kind of something that you can't experience if you're just a member at a single club. And so that benefit is really, a lot of members really value it, and we're proud to be able to offer it, and we're proud when we acquire new clubs because it gives our members additional places to go play when they're traveling. Yeah, it's
Well,
really
talk about newly acquired clubs.
neat.
Let's talk about some of them. The Georgia Club, which is very exciting, about an hour from Atlanta. The Golf Club of the Everglades in Naples, Florida. TPC Yasna Palana in Princeton, New Jersey. I got to talk about that club, right? The
It's got
club
a
in
lot of history.
Pasadena in Monterey, California. Walden on Lake Conroe and Northgate Country Club near Houston. And we're talking about A variety of designers, not just Tom Fazio, whom I love as well, Arnold Palmer Designs, Rees Jones, just a really great variety of renowned golf course designers.
Jack Nicklaus Signature is
Nicholas.
Pasadena. I mean, I love the art aspects. Like, I could sit there and talk about just the architecture of each of those courses. Like, Jack Nicklaus, so the club Pasadena is in Monterey, right? We have a club in Augusta and called Westlake. We have a club in Monterey. Those are kind of the homes of United States golf to some extent. And the club at Pasadena is one that you mentioned. It's a Jack Nicklaus signature, which I'm sorry, Jack, or anybody on the Nicklaus team, if you're listening. I usually don't love Nicklaus designs because I'm not good
They're very
enough.
challenging.
Yeah, they can be very challenging
Zach
and
loves to make them tough for
yeah, and there's
all ability levels.
yeah, and like a lot of times you sit on it, you stand on a Jack Nicklaus tee box and you're not. Your line of sight is not perfect. You don't see the entire hole, or it's a little confusing with where you're supposed to hit it. And again, I appreciate the architecture and the art, but my subjective preference is not that. But I think the club at Pasadena is absolutely stunning. I think the golf course is awesome. There, almost every hole is great. Hole 14 is a par three over a huge canyon. It's 200 yard carry from the back tee boxes, which again, I don't play from back there, but I mean, it's one of the prettiest holes that exists in even in Monterey, where you have
Wow.
Pebble Beach. It's just such a
I got
great.
to plan another trip to
Yeah,
Monterey.
you got to get to Pasadena. And then to your point, like, Rees Jones, a
Right.
great architect, Golf Club of the Everglades is in Naples, which Naples can't seem to get enough golf. If you move to Naples, you have to play golf. I think it's like a requirement to buy a house there in Naples. You have to play golf. And that's just a very classic Florida course, that Rees Jones did a very nice job with. And again, makes sense for us because of just Naples and the health of golf there. And that club's unique in that they don't have tee times in our plan. We understand Naples golf, that our members want that. So again, we're hospitality forward thinking, right? Which is, what do the members need? What do the members want? And that's what we've got to give them in order for them to continue to be a member for the next 45 years. I mean, that's our goal, right? And so, it's kind of the long-term sustainability of clubs, which we have some history of. I'll talk about Walden too. You mentioned Walden. It's north of Houston on Lake Conroe. Lake Conroe used to not really be, I'll call it, a live and work place. Like we mentioned, like, we like to have clubs where people live and work so that you can build the right culture at a club and people use the club and show up and play a lot of golf and eat a lot of food and attend the wine dinners. Well, Lake Conroe, after the pandemic, really grew to where it's about an hour outside of downtown Houston, and everybody started moving. Like, oh, I don't mind living a little further away. I'm only working 2 days in the office, so I'll
Sure.
just commute those days and live on this beautiful lake. Walden has this these three holes. It's called the Walden Triangle instead of the Bermuda Triangle, where the holes jut out into the lake. So you have this par five that goes out. It's absolutely. It was one of the top 500 holes by Golf Digest, I think, in the year 2000. So, like, it's a great hole, par five, double dog leg that goes out in the ocean. Then you hit back over the water onto another part of the Walden Triangle, and then the next hole, so that's 11, 12, 13, I think it is, goes back across. You tee off back across to another par four, and so it may be our best three hole stretch in our portfolio, where you just can play all these holes and you can get yourself in a lot of trouble, but it's stunning and you're standing out just staring at beautiful Lake Conroe. So, yeah, we've been really proud of what we've been able to acquire. And again, what we've been able to offer our members. Reciprocal play is great, as you mentioned, and our members can play that as a travel benefit, which is really, it's really cool.
And
So,
talking about legendary players who are architects as well, Gary Player
yeah.
designed Jasna Palana, which I know CGP recently acquired. And boy, I hear there are some really interesting stories about this place. It's outside of Princeton, New Jersey. I can't wait to check
Yeah.
this place out. Tell me about it, Jordan.
Yeah. Well, that club has an immense amount of history. So the Johnson and Johnson family, really it was Seward Johnson, who's one of the heirs to the original Johnson kind of throne. He was the CEO of the business after his brother for some time. Obviously a very wealthy family. He owned that property in Princeton, New Jersey, where Johnson and Johnson was located, and it was Originally, it was actually only half, and then they bought an additional amount. So they own 222 acres, I believe it is, of property in Princeton. And it was originally just the home for he and his third wife, Barbara Piasecki. And she was Polish, and they built this Polish three-bedroom mansion or two-bedroom mansion, which is kind of funny that it's only two bedrooms, but it's this massive mansion, on a hill overlooking kind of down into a valley, just a pretty stunning piece of New Jersey real estate.
Two
And then,
bedrooms and 32 bathrooms.
yeah, there's a lot of bathrooms. Yeah,
That's crazy.
it's a unique, I mean, it's beautiful. And like I said, the architecture, and she was an art She kind of had a, she had an art degree in Poland, so like the art and architecture of this place, everything was thought at the time. I think they spent $30 million to construct the property when they built it in the 70s. It was the most expensive single home property ever built in the United States at the time it was built, and so they have this beautiful property. Well, Seward passed away. Miss Piasecki Johnson was much younger than him, but she started to spend a lot of time in Monaco, so in Europe. And the family was sitting around like, well, what are we going to do with this piece of property? Like, we have this beautiful house. So they thought about making it a park. They thought about making it an art museum. One of somebody who worked for the family wanted to make it a polo field and do a polo club and make it a big polo club. And then the nephew who had some influence, Christopher Piasecki, who we bought the club from, wanted to make it a golf club. He's like, no, this property screams golf club. So they partnered with the TPC. They brought in all of the architects to really design properties. And there was really only two architects that had a plan where they could fit the right 18 holes into the existing property without knocking down a house, or there were some other houses on property. And he kind of designed around it. And so they chose Gary Player because they thought he had by far the best design that understood the property the most. And after playing the course and riding every hole multiple times, I completely agree. It is the thing I love about the architecture there from Gary Player is that the variety of holes is incredible. You have some very short, unique par threes. You have some drivable par fours. You've got holes over water. You've got some holes with a lot of forgiveness. You've got holes that are really tight. And so the variety you play through there is awesome. And then the 18th hole was designed perfectly, and it's a par five. It could be reachable in two, depending on how you get off the tee and if you get over the hill. There's a creek in front of it. The green sits down in the valley. And so your second and or third shot going into this par five, you're staring back up into the back of the property where there's now it's what is the ballroom. It used to be a pool. And so it's just this stunning picture of you feel the history in that property. It is nothing like the feeling you get at Augusta National the first time you walk on. That is like, this feeling that can't be duplicated in golf. But you play into 18 and you see this property and you think about the Johnson and Johnson history and then them deciding to turn this into a club. And you can feel it. It's really unique. It's just a unique piece of property that we're really proud to own. And it being in Princeton was important to us too. Our chairman Jose, who you mentioned, has some ties to Princeton. He was a Princeton grad, and has donated a lot of money to Princeton because he believes in education. And he's Latino, so he thinks it's important to get a diverse, student base
Sure.
there and really grow the diversity at Princeton. So there's a he's a big supporter of the community and really felt like if we could preserve this from being turned into a neighborhood, which is what we were competing against when we were working with the family, he felt like the club and the green space and the history, was really something that was important to him and us as well, and so that we can preserve the club for the next 50 years and make it better and preserve the history of this beautiful mansion that's now the clubhouse that was redone in the 90s. And so, yeah, it's really neat. It's a, that property has maybe more history than any country club I've ever been a part of or seen outside of things like, with golf history, like Augusta National and Pebble Beach, and
Sure.
just in
I can't
regards
wait
to
to
the,
see it. I mean, I hear there's a speakeasy that is downstairs. You get to it through a secret passage. It's like a vault in the basement, which Concert converted into a wine cellar.
Well, it used to be the wine cellar, and now it's a wine cellar with like a private dining area. And
Oh,
you do, you
neat.
kind of feel like you go down this elevator and you're in the basement, and all of a sudden, There's this beautiful wine cellar to do wine tastings or have a really private dinner. And yeah, it's neat. It's a really neat property. And you know, it actually does feel somewhat like a clubhouse, even though it used to be, you know, just a home. And it's really neat the way they architected the clubhouse. And we now get to try and make that better over the years and give the members more space to utilize and work with. Yeah, the wine cellar is a neat, it's certainly a neat aspect.
And there are 100 pieces of fine art still in the clubhouse?
Yeah,
Wow.
it's because again, Miss Piasecki Johnson was an art buff. I mean, even the furniture was sourced from some furniture maker in some part of Europe that she took over on a boat. And you know, we felt it was really important to keep that history. And so yeah, the art's still all there. There are rugs on the wall that cost more than feels like my house. And you know, again, that's such an important part of the history that the rugs are still there and will remain there, and they're an important piece of the feel of that club, right? Each club is unique. It's almost like each club has its own history, its own personality, its own culture, and it's really important for us to maintain that as we think about, you know, growing our portfolio in the club, in the hospitality industry, especially in the country club industry. There's no cookie cutter options. You can't just say, okay, this is the way we do things at Concert Golf, so this is the way we're going to do it at Yasna Polana. That is disrespectful to the history and culture of every single club. That is not the way you can think about the club business. And so we don't. And so, yeah, that art's really an important piece of that property.
I love that. And how does the company overall ensure, you know, this smooth transition after taking over a property?
Well, first, I would say the team that already is there that the members know is the most critical component, right? In the hospitality business, if you think about if you take care of the employees that take care of the members, you know, that's what comes first to me. Some members might disagree, but I think that's kind of the critical component. And so I think it starts with the team on the ground. They know the people, they know how things operate. And so that's step one. Step one is making sure that if we take over, that the team on the ground is well taken care of and understands their direction and feels support from us. That's the key, right? You feel supported from Concert Golf to do what you need to do to make your members happy. But sometimes that doesn't work. Maybe there's not a general manager in place. And so we do have a team, a very small team of corporate experts with decades of experience in food and beverage, or in membership, or in catering and events, or in golf, that can go in and assist the club when they have some, you know, an area that maybe needs attention or there's room for improvement, right? We always believe with the clubs we acquire, there's room for improvement. And we believe those improvements will, you know, make members more satisfied, not less. It's not always perfect, but we definitely do our best there. And so we do have a team of experts that goes in and again makes sure the team on the ground feels the support. But
Sure.
it all starts with the team on the ground.
And what about Westlake Country Club? I know in Augusta, Georgia, they
Yeah.
recently had to deal with, you know, Hurricane Helene, and I understand that the course was up and running within about 2 weeks, at least nine
Yeah.
holes.
Yeah, well, first with that, there was a lot of people in the community in Augusta and in the Westlake neighborhood where the course sits, where they had a lot more damage or a lot more tragedy than we experienced. We actually feel like as a club, even though we lost 1,000+ trees on the course, you know, I'd be remiss, I guess, to not acknowledge the you know people that were affected a lot more than we were. But yeah, when the hurricane came through Augusta, you know, people read about Augusta National having damage. We did. We lost over 1,000 trees. And what's kind of a bummer about that is the feel of that course is very much Augusta, Georgia. Very tall Georgia pines. You're hitting through the woods. And so it gives it this feel that's very unique. There's pine straw that lines everywhere. So I won't compare it to Augusta National because I'm a respectful golfer. But the style and feel of that, you know, geography is what you get at Westlake, which is a pretty special feeling. And it certainly didn't ruin that feeling. But when you have that many trees go down, you know, there's a lot of places where there were some cool lines of trees and the trees went down. But we have, you know, the resources as a company to send in, you know, resources from other locations and help our teams with cleanup. And I think, yeah, that was our goal, which is, look, if everybody's lives have kind of been interrupted with the hurricane, how quickly can we get people playing at least 9 holes again? And so we sent down, teams and trees from other tree trimmers and from other markets and other courses, and we were able to get that up and running. There's still work to do there, but the course is open. The greens, didn't have a lot of damage, which was great. You always worry about a tree falling on a green. And so yeah, the course is, we were able to very quickly get that course running again, which our members appreciated. They probably needed some solace just getting back out there and, being with nature and on the golf course versus worrying about whatever they have to worry about at home.
What are your observations about the growth of golf and where the game is headed in the future as it relates to private golf course acquisitions?
2 years in a row, this is what's been so unique about golf is COVID hit and people started to play more. But 2 years in a row, the National Golf Foundation has reported that more people have played full swing off the course golf than they have on the court, on course, what we call green grass golf. That's never happened before. And it's Topgolf and simulators and things that just didn't really exist, but have boomed since 2010, probably. And now, you can't go to a strip mall without finding something, some new golf restaurant that has simulators, or there's Topgolfs and Drive Shacks that are popping up in every market now, just about. That has really sustained the growth of the game. And so figuring out how to get people into the game and then it become unintimidating, right? Because country clubs have always been kind of stuffy and you walk in, you're not sure if you can be on your phone or you're not sure if you should have your sport coat on. I visit a lot of clubs around the country, concert golf and not, and that seems to be going away to some extent to where the rules are more about comfort and experience than they are about rules, right? Which is like, no, you have to have your sport coat on when you go in the clubhouse. I appreciate when there's still a rule, take your hat off at the door. But it's not just, can you please take your hat off? It's a rule. It's just, it's more about that member experience. And so taking those people who are entering the game and making sure they continue to feel comfortable with the hospitality experience at a club, that's where we see that we fit, which is making sure that our members feel welcomed and that new members feel welcome, because there is a lot of people getting into the game. The growth of green grass golf is still very sustainable. It's still growing more than we've ever seen, even since the Tiger boom. And so because of that, I don't know what that will do with acquisitions or how we acquire, how many clubs we acquire. But again, we hope that we can just grow our portfolio in a way that we think's, really valuable. We're buying clubs that we love, that we know that we can make an impact at. We can be the right successor to a developer or whatever, so that in 50 years, hopefully I'm not doing this anymore, but the clubs are still thriving and healthy.
Well,
So.
continued success. Jordan Pease, Senior VP, Corporate Development for Concert Golf Partners. What a pleasure to have you on Sports Interview.
Well, thank you. It was nice to be able to talk about concert golf a little bit. So I appreciate it, especially from somebody with your experience and your golf experience and the people that you've interviewed. It's a real honor. So thank you, Anne.
Thanks so much. Alex Hyde White, and of course I know Alex is a golfer. He's been golfing for decades, but as an actor, he's worked with Steven Spielberg and Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade. He played Dick Kessner, the divorce lawyer, in Catch Me If You Can. He was one of the last contract players in Hollywood, and has always been, as I said, a great golfer. Growing up in Palm Springs, he learned the game, and he writes a lot about his passion for golf in a book he wrote called In the Volume, 40 Years in Hollywood.
Good morning, Anne. Thank you. Live from New York. What a pleasure. Thank you.
I appreciate you getting us early, up early for us. And where did we meet? I think we met like decades ago, but it had to have been at a celebrity golf tournament, right?
Well, we were part of the old Celebrity Players Tour for retired athletes and out-of-work actors back, starting in the mid to late 90s, wasn't it?
Well, you were. I wasn't in that group, but I remember covering, doing a lot of just coverage
Well,
on
maybe
that.
like at charity tournaments, like the Sinatra tournament, maybe out here in the
Yeah,
desert,
I think it
or
was the Sinatra tournament. I miss that event. That was so
Hilton
much
Head
fun.
used to have a nice, we were part of, like Ron was talking earlier, we were part of that era where, we were Glen Campbell, LA Open, Jackie Gleason, Inverary, celebrity, famous sort of entertainers
Right,
and
Bob
professional
Hope, the Bob
golf
Hope
relied on one
Classic.
another. Yeah.
I love that event in
Oh
Palm
yeah, I used
Springs.
to cat. I used to caddy in the Hope. I grew up in Palm Springs as a kid, and I caddied one year when Chi-Chi Rodriguez was in the group.
Oh,
Yeah,
right.
it's fun. It's great to look back on it. And listening to Ron earlier, golf is a timeless way to spend. It's a timeless way to spend time. It's early in the morning. I'm being redundant, but the more things change, you still got to get the little ball in the hole,
It's so challenging, right? It never gets easy. And so tell us about when did golf enter your world?
Well, I was a smart kid, and I got pushed ahead a couple of years in Palm Springs. It's meant that I really couldn't play baseball and whatnot. And then, hell, I was 12 years old and couldn't sort of take a year off from my knees, give my knees time to break. And so that meant start playing golf. And it was, what, it was 1970, 1971, and it ended up being a beautiful heyday of golf. The Nicklaus, Trevino, Watson, Johnny Miller, and, they all came through Palm Springs. I remember watching Nicklaus and Palmer play at Bermuda Dunes one year. Just wonderful events. And they were old-fashioned, old equipment. It was, persimmon and balata, and it just became a game that reflected sort of life. And being in the entertainment business, my dad was a British actor, so we had a lot of time on our hands, and it was always a good way to spend time and to sort of entertain in a way, like Ron was talking about Scottie Scheffler and Rahm, and when you were talking about Lydia and whatnot. It's entertaining, and to be a part of it, and it's skill based, but it's no judgment. It's not how well you play the game that matters. It's how you play the game that matters, and that's a great metaphor.
Are there any similarities between acting and playing golf? I'm sure there are a few if you can.
What you guys just talked about was a lovely quote that you not only do you forget your losses, you forget your victories, and that's really what professional acting is all about. Because it doesn't nobody cares what you did last. It's like, are you any good right now? And so it's very transactional, and you have to honor the result more than whether it's a plus or minus. How can a guy like John Rahm justify, or not justify, how can he accept
Sure.
not winning the Olympics? I mean, come on. It's just like when we're up for jobs and you get close and you don't get it. And I write about it in my book, and in the volume, it's very much a treatise about how I've managed to live in this glorious world in a very competitive, subjective part of it, and auditioning for a living, and occasionally getting a nice job is like making the cut, and then getting a good tee time on Sunday.
That's right.
It's
I mean,
not
but there's so much
guaranteed. So
rejection, and how do you, it's just like in golf, how do you handle
Well,
that
you see,
there's so
that's
many
the
more
question.
downs than there are ups, right? There's so many more lows than there are highs.
That's the question, and it's in the book. It says, I've always asked quite often as how do you handle the rejection? And the simple answer really, and is you don't. You have to accept it. You have to let it live, and sort of in a Zen kind of way, let it breathe through you. Let you become a part of it. Let it become a part of you. And ultimately, by accepting it, it's like anything else. You learn to live with it, and sometimes you actually enjoy it, not the result, but the doing. I mean, look, when you get up and down, like I did one year, and it's in the book at Michael Jordan's Skins game. It was me, Emmitt Smith, Joe Morgan, the wonderful Cincinnati Red All-Star, and me. And they wanted a guy, and I think Jack Wagner wasn't available. So I said, Al, I was going to play in the tournament. Alex, will you play in the Skins game? And I was on a show at the time. And I was a bit nervous, but I got up and down on 18 and a par four to win the Skins game.
Wow.
And at that point, I realized that this was the game of golf sort of rewarding me for playing since I was a kid. It was a moment that ended up being so satisfying because I just executed. And that's like you were talking earlier, the bottom line of golf is either it goes in or it doesn't. But the point is, as a result, you know, we've been on Michael Jordan's Christmas card list for 25 years. And if we were to see him tomorrow, he'd say, Alex, Shelley, how are you? You know, things like that. Because it's not so much that I got up and down to win. It was hot as heck, and we were glad it was all over. But it was how we played the game, and I was able to donate some of the winning money back to the charity and the whole thing. You know, those are the heydays. But, you know, the celebrity charity golf, when it works, you know, was a really nice little tiny part of our culture. It comes back a bit now and again with the newer generation. It's still around, but we were lucky, I think, to be part of it when the crowds would turn out and the communities would benefit. We, of course,
I mean, Dinah Shore was just so involved, you know, with her own tournament, you know, in California, in the desert, as you know, and you just meet so many
with ABC.
That's right. You meet so many beautiful people in golf, right? So many interesting. I mean, Alex Lyson from Rush, I adore now. And I met him at a celebrity tournament. We honored him at my golf event a couple of years back. And, you just have this common denominator of golf and the challenge of golf and the fact that
Alice Cooper had a great tournament.
Right. Alice. I used to play in his event, Alice Cooper.
Yeah.
And,
but, you know, I got to tell you, the I told you about our bucket list trip. My boy recently graduated from Auburn, and we had a graduation trip on the books the last 4 or 5 years, but for obvious reasons, not only, you know, it was delayed because the world took a hiatus for like 3 or 4 years. And we finally went to our Scottish trip. If you have a moment.
Yes, please tell me.
There was, we spent 2 weeks in Glasgow base. We walked 2 days of the Open at Troon, blustery conditions. Played the wonderful home of golf, which is Prestwick, which is, you know,
love that
12
course.
Original 12 hole course.
Quirky, where, quirky, you know, quirky.
You would go and, you know, if you got into trouble on the east side at St. Andrews for playing a gutta percha ball, you'd have to go over to Prestwick, you know, and such history. And they have 18 holes, and it's like a bowling alley in a way because it's narrow and wild and woolly, but an ultimate fair test of golf, and it should be on any golfer's bucket list if you can just go to Prestwick, because it's such a fair test. I mean, if you find the ball in the heather, you have a lie, and if you don't, then fair dues. Don't beat yourself up, just take a lateral and play the next one, because it's a great match play course, and we had a lovely two rounds there, and it was British Open week. Gary Player was there one day, and it was just a beautiful experience. But I wanted to tell you about this hidden gem that we got to out in the Hebrides, which is the Outer Islands, an old Tom Morris design that was sort of rediscovered about 10 years ago called Askernish. And it's up there out where the Vikings conquered in, you know, year dot, 12th century or wherever. And it's wild and woolly, and it's like Kiowa Island only, you know, 150 years ago. It's on the bluffs. It could be a Game of Thrones location. And it's these huge cliffs overlooking the North Atlantic. And, you know, they might mow the greens, you know, twice a month. It was just such an untamed and beautiful, wide open experience. And it's become famous a bit on YouTube. Some of the golf travelers have sort of discovered it, and it's just it's going back in time. It was really
what a great trip with your son, right?
Yeah, it was great. Well,
very
he earned it. He got himself a scholarship to Auburn, and so he earned it. Yeah.
Now
yeah.
I understand. Are you working a bit with Bubba Watson?
Yeah, we live in Pensacola. My wife and I moved to Pensacola 2 years ago. Her family's there, and we just happen to live right next to Pensacola Golf Center, owned and operated by Bubba Watson, his partner. And so we would go and hit balls, and The same older guy would be there. I said, "Dang, you're here a lot." He goes, "Yeah, tell me about it." He's Bubba's right-hand man, Gabe's dad. And I said to him, "Well, you know, I used to work in a pro shop years ago. You ever need anything?" He said, "Hey, wait a minute, come here." And that was 3 years ago.
Oh, so gosh. So you're working in the pro shop. Yeah. I love it.
Old actors never retire. They just go back to work at the pro shop.
You're still acting. You still have some projects coming up, right?
Oh yeah, you know, I'm better than ever. I'm in my mid-60s now, and I've been doing it since I was 19. I'm starting to think maybe I'm gonna make a career out of it. And I was in Jordan Peele's film Nope a couple years ago, which is a nice part. I played an English producer in the opening couple of reels, and you know, he's the new Spielberg in terms of. Universal loves him, and he's just a classy, inside the ropes guy. You know, he makes movies the way that are memorable golf rounds with the way that Lydia Ko treats Ron, or the way that Peter Jacobson treated people when I was starting out pro-ams. You know, he's one of you. He's a real guy. Jordan Peele's a talented filmmaker. And I had a little part in Taylor Sheridan, the house that. You know, a Paramount Network show called Landman, which is like the new Dallas. It's an oil show. It'll be out next year. Little bits and pieces. I was supposed to be in this Joaquin Phoenix film that just fell apart down in Mexico. So that was a bit of a bummer. That was a very interesting independent film, but somebody must have had a fight, and he walked off in the end of that. So.
And you do a lot of audio books, right?
I do. I've got an audiobook company. Yeah, Punch Audio. My middle name is Punch, and I been doing that for about 12 years. We really specialize in independent authors, you know, people like yourself and other successful folk who have a story to tell based on your life, and they come in, and we find them a nice location, no matter where they are, to record their audiobook, and they tell their story.
Well, you have a great voice, Alex. I've always enjoyed listening to your voice. And quickly before we wrap up the show, what was it like working with Julia Roberts? I had to ask. Pretty woman.
Yeah. Julia was great. You know, it was like being in a flower field in Wales in the first day of April. You just sort of look out and all of a sudden everything blooms in front of you. this is nature at work.
And my gosh.
She was lovely. I remember we had the wrap party, and she'd been nominated for an Oscar for Two Magnolias. And we had the little screening and a little wrap party in Disney on the lot. And I walked up and said, "Hey, you got your speech ready for Monday night at Oscars?" And, you know, we were heavily pregnant with our first son at the time. And she said, "Forget about that. What, you know, you got a name for your boy." And, you know, she's just a sweet Southern gal.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I haven't seen her in ages, but rather like Michael, it's a joy for me to know and feel that if I were to run into Julia again, you know, she'd stop and, "Hey, what's going on?" We'd catch up. And those things are hidden bonuses, you know.
What a great career, Alex Hyde-White, and continued success on the golf course as well. I know you're a fine player. Thanks so much for joining me.
I hope you enjoyed this edition of Sports Interview with Anne Liguori. My thanks to Alex Hyde-White, to Jordan Peace of Concert Golf Partners, and to Mike Goodsell in production. As the great Gary Player always says, and Gary is one of the 12 legends in my book, Life on the Green, the more I practice, the luckier I get. Have a great weekend. Be kind, be safe, and I look forward to visiting with you next time right here on Sports Interview with Anne.